the Fri-Yay Cocktail, presented by Anna Glavinsky.
Indeed, and in joining me on It's the Fri-Yay Cocktail, I'm delighted to have Michael McBride on the line. He is a social media sensation with all of his facts and bite-sized bits of information, and he's gone on to write a book which is going to help us all, called How to Sound Smart at Parties. Michael, delighted to have you on. How are you doing today?
Hey, Anna, how's it going? I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Seattle in the U.S. So it's early in the morning for me right now. I know it's sort of, you know, evening drive home for y'all. Rush hour, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Maybe you could make a little fact about time zones. Have you done any facts on time zones?
The most interesting one is, of course, is, you know, what is zero, right? Why is GMT zero? And that goes back to essentially, you know, time zones weren't necessary until, Britain started expanding its empire, making maps early on and such and such.
Well, you really are interesting at parties.
I hope so. Actually, I think one of the reasons I started my social media careers was because people got tired of me saying fun facts at parties, really. And, you know, that's really one of the reasons why I kind of wrote this book, is because in my mind, it's like, you know, of course, it's great to like learn and hear fun facts on the radio or on social media or whatnot. But in my mind, it's like, I always love hearing fun facts just like with a glass of wine, with friends. Like, that's the place I most love learning. And so I kind of want to like recreate that feel in a book, you know, which is a challenge, but I hope I did it.
I know, it was perfect to have you here on the Fri-Yay Cocktail as well, because that's a little bit what the show is about as well. Information, tidbits of news. And you've got that absolutely dialed. But let's find out a little bit more about you. Is it just like your personality that you want to find out more information and share that with people? And that's how you came about doing social media. By the way, if anyone's not aware, the social media handle for Michael is @IdeaSoup. And you know, it's a bit like a soup or a cocktail of random bite-sized bits of facts. Who are you? Why did you start it? And did you expect it to get as big as it did?
No, definitely not for the last question. I think we're approaching like 400 million views now on these history and science videos, which is just crazy to think about. And I'd never expected it to get that big. I always kind of make content for an audience of one, just like whatever I'm personally interested in. And like growing up, you know, I just came from one of those families that like every night we were arguing at the dinner table about history. My brother loves history and loves World War II. My dad loves history. My mom. So every night we were arguing about what the Roman Empire should have done differently and how World War II could have gone and this and that. So I've always just been like intensely curious. I love history. I love science. I love learning. And yeah, like 5-6 years ago, I just started putting it on social media because, like I said, my friends just got tired of hearing me talk about it. And it just took off. I've been really, you know, thankful that it resonates with folks ever since.
You found your people for sure. They're definitely out there, aren't they? did you find them straight away, or did they find you straight away, or did it take time to grow?
It's funny. It's like I was kind of like an overnight success after about 2 or 3 years of nothing happening. Wow. So I spent about 2 or 3 years kind of like writing a blog, and I actually started making this kind of short form educational content on Instagram back in like 2016, 2017. No one watched it. Like, it just the audience wasn't there for it yet. And I started making it because I had a blog, and one of my friends, he's from Long Island outside of New York, or in New York. And he tells me one day, he's like, Michael, I don't read. Your articles seem cool, but I don't read. I'm like, you know, maybe there's a whole host of folks out there who like love history, want to learn, you know, but they're not the keenest readers. They're not necessarily going to pick up a book. And so I started making these little, you know, bite-sized videos. And then when TikTok really started popping off in 2019, I decided I got on the platform. And back then it was all, you know, like kids dancing. It was really odd to be someone in my, you know, late 20s on the app doing history videos. But I was like, I'm going to do 30 videos in 30 days and just see what happens. And I didn't even tell anyone. I was like kind of embarrassed to be on the app at the time. I was like, I didn't tell my friends. I didn't tell my family. I wanted that anonymity to like experiment creatively. Uh-huh. And at the end of those 30 days, I had 30,000 followers. And I was like, okay, there's something here. I'm going to go all in on it. And 6 months later, I quit my job. And I went full time on social media, and I've been doing that now. It's been almost 5 years.
Wow, what a move. And I mean, what does your life look like now? Is it you talking to your phone editing videos, researching facts. That's your day in, day out?
Very boring. Very, very boring. Essentially just researching. I am fortunate to be able to have traveled a lot. I've tried to make a lot of content kind of abroad. So I spent 2 years kind of traveling full time, making content. Like I went to Angkor Wat, for example, in Cambodia, and did like kind of like a mini documentary on Angkor Wat, things like that. Obviously able to kind of show up. Spent a year and a half in South America. So I'm actually fluent in Spanish, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are as well.
Yes. Oh, that's super
and,
cool.
But generally outside of that, and even then, even when I was traveling, most of my days are just, you know, doing deep research and then talking by myself into a camera all day long. It's a little wild, actually.
It's super cool. And you know what? I'm actually going to ask you to try and tune in after this interview as well, because I've got my little boy in the studio with me today. And when he's in the studio, he does his very own little section, which is called Factoids with Aaron. Now, he's a Spanish speaker, so he gives me the fact in Spanish. I tell him how to say it in English, and then we get a little Spanish and English lesson for everybody and a fun fact about animals. So I think it sounds right up your street.
I love that so much. it sounds like a boy after my own heart.
And yeah, it really sounds like potentially to follow in your footsteps. But totally. But you've already been there and you've done it. I mean, it's super mad. It's super mad that is your life. And how do you go about fact checking? How are you sure that what you're saying is real? Because you don't want to become a fake news person. I guess you still want to have some credibility to what you're talking about.
No, 1,000%. Like, I think that's really one of the most challenging things. I think there's a ton of great, I call it, you know, edutainment, right? The fusion of entertainment and education. There's a ton of great edutainment creators out there today. But I think that being able to both not compromise on academic rigor and the truth, but also not compromising on the entertainment value and how fun and consumable it is. A lot of people compromise on one or the other. Either it's boring and dry and very academic, or it's just sensational, fake news, conspiracy kind of stuff. And I really strive very, very hard to strike both balances. The entertainment side, obviously, is sometimes the harder part, kind of the jokes and things like that. But in terms of fact checking for the book, you know, I hired two different professional fact checkers, and I had the fact checkers fact check each other. And wow. I did my own fact checking for each fact, of course. And then for my day-to-day videos, I would say a lot of the time on each video is just spent figuring out what is the truth. And of course, on a lot of things, right? There's no one quote unquote truth, for example. Mm-hmm. So let's say there's something from ancient Greece, right? There's probably like maybe 80% of historians have one theory on how, a battle went, for example. But there's usually like 20% that have some kind of fringe theory of, oh, actually, this battle was much smaller than we expect because we've looked at archaeological evidence and the bones on site. There were less than we expected to find and things like that. And so I think actually the hardest thing around fact checking is when there's a video like that. Do I just present that 80% as like, hey, this is the consensus among historians? Do I talk about the varying viewpoints? And how do I avoid giving too much credit to like fringe people? Like, let's say there's 1% of historians. There's one guy that's like, hey, this battle never happened. But he's just, you know, full of hot air. Right. I don't want to be giving, you know, him a platform when it's not true. So that's a huge part of the process for me. But I like to think it's like kind of, behind the Wizard of Oz curtain, right? Like, I think by the time it gets to the audience, I want it to just be entertaining and fun and consumable. And I don't want them to have to think about that. And so that's why I put so much work into fact checking, so they can really trust that what they're getting is really thorough and fact checked.
Yeah, and can be as true as can be. Because, you know, you've really thrown a point there that I hadn't thought about. Nothing is, especially when it comes to history, isn't necessarily 100% truth anyway. So you can only go with what you believe to be as true as possible. Do you have any go-tos? Like, who are the people that you trust most on the internet? And also, in a similar vein, but the opposite side of the coin, have you been called out ever for getting it thoroughly wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I'm both counts. I think that in terms of like individual people, I think just following other sort of in terms of public-facing folks, I think great creators that have a background in science, I think Hank Green, Neil deGrasse Tyson, people like that, who are just like these esteemed edutainment creators, are great for the average person to consume factual information from. In terms of actual fact-checking, I think you always got to go to obviously scholarly sources are the best, and any kind of like meta-analysis specifically of scholarly sources. I know this sounds crazy and controversial. I really think Wikipedia is a great place for 99% of people to do 99% of their fact-checking jump off point, right? Like, go in, read the sources cited. But one thing that Wikipedia gives you that even some scholarly sources won't is like an overview of the landscape. And if there is kind of this 80-20 disagreement, Wikipedia is one of the kind of few places that will really air that out. And then you click into the 80, you read the scholarly sources on that. You click into the 20, you read the scholarly sources on that. But I think it comes down to, you know, finding those types of sources and also just getting a bird's eye view of a topic before drilling down. I think when we get too specific too quick, that's when we get in trouble. Have I gotten things wrong? Of course. There's a part of me that actually kind of loves getting things wrong, because it means like I learn, my audience learns. But I've never gotten anything massive wrong. But there have been times when I've kind of like overgeneralized in videos, or especially in these kind of 1 minute videos. You can simplify too much. So I think one mistake I've made in the past is, okay, I want to make it simple enough for everyone to consume, 1 minute, fast, tight, fun, but simplification turns into oversimplification very quickly. And so that's been kind of a challenge at times, but I love, you know, my audience, I love the comment section. I kind of love the internet because it's a bit meritocratic. Like, you get corrected very quickly and very harshly. Like, you learn your lesson after two or three videos, you know, of messing up, and maybe like 2021, when I was first starting out, you learn your lesson really quick, because it hurts when you get those comments from folks who really know what they're talking about. You're like, oh no, I messed up. So fortunately, I haven't had one of those in maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years. That's great, because I've gotten so much more rigorous with the fact checking.
You sound like such a nerd. It's amazing.
I totally am.
And I wanted to send you on to my old university lecturers as well and say that Wikipedia can be used as a source. I was always getting told off for that. And I was like, but something just tells me that it's right. It's like my instinct here.
Totally. It's a perfect jumping off point, right? You have to start somewhere. Mm. And like, I just think you need to start at that, you know, 30,000 foot view, 3,000 foot view.
Yeah. You're just not allowed to use it as a source anymore. Anyway, so that's about you and Idea Soup. And you've gone on to write a book. The book isn't called Idea Soup. It's not just a collation of the videos that you've put, but in written formats. Is it? Why did you decide to sort of take it into a slightly different format? Because also, you say here that you wanted to take readers through a narrative like of a cocktail party. And I saw that you specifically stated that you didn't want to make a bathroom book with just a smattering of random information, which is what you've sort of ended up making. So tell us about that process.
So I think it's like, I think one of the real like travesties of today is we have sort of fun facts and information and these bite-sized clips of the news or this or that, but it all exists in isolation, right? And that's not how humans consume information person to person, right? And that's one of the things that's so amazing about learning things at a party is you're hanging out, it's a glass of wine, someone brings it up, right? And then you talk about it, you debate it, someone else has heard this fact and they say, oh, actually, I don't think that's true. I think it's actually a little bit different than you phrased it. But when we consume information online, it's not like that. It's very capsulized, right? And so I wanted to create a book that has amazing fun facts. There's over 150 fun facts, the best I've come up with in, you know, 7 years of doing this. I mean, it's really outstanding fun facts. But then there's also this narrative of a cocktail party throughout, these eight characters that lend context and nuance to these facts. And also just make it more fun, right? Like, they're cracking jokes. There's like a narrative throughout of this dinner party and courses coming out and wine being served. And so it's very fun to read. Like, I think that one of the things I really love about this book that I've worked so, is I spent 2 years writing this book. Wow. I mean, thousands of hours. And I really wanted to thread the line between, I want it to be so fun and so entertaining that even someone who doesn't read books, like my friend Steven from Long Island, who, you know, got me to make videos originally, I want to make a book that even he would like because it's so entertaining, but also that accomplished this other goal of like, not letting these facts exist in isolation, going deeper, explaining why we know what we know, explaining why a fact is significant, et cetera. And I think I've accomplished it. I mean, the people who have read it so far have given rave reviews, absolute rave reviews. It's called How to Sound Smart at Parties, because it's kind of a cheeky, you know, theme throughout of obviously everyone's trying to, you know, sound smarter than everyone else. And there's also some tips in the book on how to sound smart at parties, if that's what folks are interested in.
a self-help book as well there.
Exactly.
I'm absolutely sold on it. It sounds fantastic. Although I know it's not meant to be read in isolation, please give us one of your favorite fun facts from the book.
Well, you know, I think because, you know, a lot of listeners in Spain, I think they'll really appreciate this. Bulls don't actually get angry at the color red.
Oh.
We know this because bulls' eyes cannot see the color red. It is actually the movement of the cape in bullfighting that makes bulls charge. And the red is for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
So you can have a bullfighting cape any color. It could be black, it could be brown, it could be plaid, right? You know, but it's always red because that's what the audience wants to see. They want to see that whip of that beautiful red cape as the bull charges. And yeah.
Oh, but God, like, we're all such suckers, aren't we? We just fall right, for right. all the pomp and the glamour.
Always, always. There's one thing I learned about history is that's always been true.
Yeah, I think that is a very human thing. But in a more serious sense, what are some of the more deeper or more thought-provoking topics that you explore in the book? Maybe some of the less lighthearted stuff?
No, totally. So I think, you know, I mean, it's all fairly lighthearted. There's deeper stuff. I talk about war and this and that, but I think even lighthearted stuff has like deeper resonance. That's something I very deeply believe about, fun fact. So for example, you know, when the first Egyptian pyramids were built, woolly mammoths still walked the earth, right?
Wow.
That's one of those facts that it's fun and it's light, but it also gives you a very deep perspective on how long humans have been here and how far away the ancient past actually is. You know, like ancient Egypt sort of had their own archaeologists that explored older ancient Egypt, right? And I think those types of facts, right, they are light, but they also say something deeper about the human condition, our relation to the natural world, et cetera. You know, Cleopatra's lifetime was closer to the first iPhone, was closer to Bitcoin than the building of the first pyramid. Like Cleopatra's wow. the Bitcoin than the first pyramid. And so, you know, I think the best facts, the best history, it gives us a very deep appreciation for our shared humanity. Like to me, science, history, the fact that we know so much, to me, it really is something magic, something special. It is, you know, sort of, yeah, my religion, if you want to call it that. And so, yeah, but then, like I said, most of the facts are fun. But there's good stuff like the Bronze Age collapse. Here's another one that I think is really interesting that kind of gives a sense that long sense of history. The blue whale, right? The blue whale is the largest animal that has ever existed. So we think about dinosaurs being so massive, but like we currently share the earth with the largest animal that has ever existed that we know of. And some scientists hypothesize that blue whales are as large as an animal can possibly be due to anatomical limits on surface area and blood pressure and things like that. And so I think there's something special about that, right? Like we look at Jurassic Park and we say, this is crazy, this is wild. But we humans right now, in hundreds of millions of years of the Earth, billions of years of the Earth's history, we are lucky enough to exist with the largest animal that has ever existed that we know of. So I don't know. That's why I love fun facts, is because they say something so much deeper about our place on Earth.
It's such a shame that you already have your own really massive thing going on already, because I want you to get you on as a regular guest on this show.
I'll come on anytime. It's been so fun talking to you, and I would come on anytime.
The stuff that you're talking about is so up the street of the things that we cover. So earlier on in the show, I did an article about these little hobbit humans. I don't know. Actually, does this ever happen to you as well? People give you facts and you're like, oh, I knew that already. This must happen to you all the time. I feel like I'm about to tell you something and you're just going to be like, that, old news. But it was about these, they recently discovered a few months ago that there were tiny little humans living on this island in Indonesia who were only about 1 meter tall as a full grown adult. But they think that they were originally average, like normal human height, as in our lifetime of human height. And then they somehow ended up on that island, and then they evolved to become even smaller because it was evolutionary in their favor. It was appropriate because they had a limited food supply, but they didn't have predators. So it served them well to get smaller and smaller and smaller until they were like little Middle Earth people.
Wow. That is absolutely amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I know that this is, I have not heard of those specific hominids, but I do know that in general, there's a kind of a broad philosophy that when creatures are isolated on an island, they do tend to get smaller and smaller. So for example, on Cyprus, in the time of kind of the like ancient Greeks just before, there was a population of dwarf elephants. There were elephants that ended up on Cyprus, and they just got smaller and smaller and smaller for the exact same reasons you just mentioned, right? You know, not a lot of predators. Notice, so your priority becomes kind of conserving energy, conserving food. You get smaller. There's these dwarf elephants, and some people, this is a little fringe, I should qualify, but some people think that that is actually where the myth of the Cyclops comes from, because what? Dwarf elephant skulls, if you look at a dwarf elephant skull, kind of the top of it has the one giant hole, right? And people think that potentially, you know, ancient Greeks, folks like that, found these dwarf elephant skulls that existed before them and thought it was like a mythical Cyclops skull. It's just a theory. It's a fringe theory. But yeah, the phenomenon of dwarf animals on islands, I think, is fascinating. Thank you for sharing with me. I actually was not familiar with that. I'm excited. Maybe you'll see a TikTok on that later.
I'll keep my eye out for it. See what I did there. Yeah. Because I wanted to do like some, you give me a fact, I raise you another fact, but I'm dry now. I've got nothing else. So I'm resorting to puns in desperation. Just finally then, this, you've talked to us about Idea Soup. Obviously, you've got your book, How to Appear Smart or How to Sound Smart at Parties. What's next for you in your personal brand, the future, any other exciting projects coming along?
After this book launch, probably like sleep for a week, most likely. No, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'll be appearing on potentially one or two TV shows next year. But more so, I just want to make longer, better, deeper videos, more like mini documentaries, like what I did at Angkor Wat, for example, that are these longer, deeper dives that are kind of these mini documentaries. There's kind of a, you know, there's the very short form, fun fact kind of stuff. And there's the like amazing BBC, you know, long form documentaries. And they do an amazing job, by the way. And but then kind of in the middle where there's kind of like 10, 20, 30 minutes, topics that deserve a little bit of time, but you can still finish with dinner and don't have to spend 3 hours watching. It's kind of things like I want to create. And there are some great creators doing that on YouTube right now, for sure. So it's not an original idea, but it's something I'm really passionate about. Just being able to kind of go deeper on those topics and potentially even go on location in a lot of these places, because that's also just really enjoyable for me. You know, like I said, I'm always making content for an audience of one. And I always say, I love learning. And if I find it interesting, hopefully at least one other person will.
Well, it sounds like they certainly do. Well, several million people already do. You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Michael McBride, his book, How to Sound Smart at Parties, An Evening of Fun Facts and Curious Conversations. You can find it on the Talk Radio Europe website, or of course, maybe pop it into Google. Michael, thank you so much. Goodbye. It's been lovely having you.
And it's been so great chatting, and thanks for sharing your fun facts. I really enjoyed learning with you today. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Have a good day.